Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Defining Truth. Today we're going to talk about Iran threatening the entire world. All right, so it's been a week since the last episode, and I'd encourage you to go back and listen to it. We talked about chapter 4 in the Defining Truth book covering pride and emotions, etc. This week, we're going to have kind of a casual conversation here. We don't have much prepped per se, but a lot in the news as the world waits for this alleged attack from Iran. They've made a lot of threats. They're blowing a lot of hot air. And if you don't know the background, April 1st, the Israelis struck a target in Damascus, Syria, which ended up killing 7 IRGC high-ranking members, generals. And for good reason, the architect of the October 7th attack against Israel, which we now know was planned by the Iranians, was there in that building when it was struck. Of course, Iran, in classic Iranian fashion, is threatening revenge and, you know, all of this stuff, which is kind of ironic, because revenge against what? I mean, they helped plan this October 7th murder of innocent civilians, and then Israel responds, and now they're saying they're going to take revenge? We're like, no, the strike was revenge. So we're going to go over that in detail, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Trump's comments on abortion and why we think the consultant class is driving that nonsensical response. We absolutely do not agree with it. He's still the man for the job. We've never agreed really 100% with anyone on anything, and I don't think you should. We shouldn't pedestal people as if they're, you know, God. But, you know, we'll choose the better of two evils in this case, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. So, Brandon, so before we started, we were talking a little bit about Iran and whatnot, and we were going over how they have in the past made a lot of threats against Western targets, etc. And when they do, like back in 2020, I believe, when they responded to us killing Soleimani, they, you know, they ended up shooting a bunch of rockets like into the desert, and they shot some at military bases in the Middle East, American bases, and a bunch of, you know, it didn't really do much. But I think they're able to go back and tell their people in the Islamic Republic, you know, we struck at the great infidels, and it just doesn't seem like a big response. So while U.S. intel communities are warning of an attack, an imminent attack today, April 12th or the 13th is what everyone's saying now, everybody's kind of wondering what exactly is that going to look like? So what were you asking me before about their missile range and, something about that, or about what kind of missiles they had?
Well, yeah. So the question was, in context, Israel has the Iron Dome. The United States has Patriot missiles.
Yeah.
What would, if any, Iran's missile defense system look like? Do they have one? What does it look like? Because I think the reality is, or the question was, what would Israel's effectiveness be if they were to strike a target such as Tehran?
Yeah, so, I mean, what we know, the Iranian missile system is sort of tiered in like, if you can imagine, concentric circles. Their top missile, I'm going to mess up the name of it. We could probably look it up. If you look up the Iranian, you want to Google, like, Iranian missiles. I forget the name, but I know it's Dash 4 at the end. It's their longest range missile. That missile, I believe, you can tell me, has about a 2,000 kilometer range, and it carries like a 3,900 pound warhead, or it has the capacity to, including their new one has the ability to carry more fuel, so it can reach farther. Now, that kilometer range puts Israel within Iran's target, really from the sort of epicenter of Iran itself. Now, obviously, if you move it, did you find the name?
Yeah, so I have this article here from The Economist. It was on April 11th, so yesterday. And the title of the article is nine deadly Iranian missiles that can target Israel and U.S. bases in the Middle East. So let me just go through this quickly.
Look at the top one.
Yeah, let me see if they have a list here. So they have a Sejil missile spelled S-E-J-J-I-L. And it's a two-stage solid propellant medium-range ballistic missile developed by Iran, likely developed in the 1990s, and its range is 2,000 kilometers with a payload of 700 kilograms. So Tehran to Jerusalem is 2,000 kilometers, so ideally it could hit at least Jerusalem. They have a Khaibar missile. This is the one that you were talking about. It's also known as the Khorasar-4.
Yeah, that one.
Also a medium-range ballistic missile, and it is also a range of 2,000 kilometers with a capacity to carry 1,500-kilogram warhead.
Okay,
and then they have some other ones, too.
So the point is, do they have weaponry that could strike the heart of Israel, which they're claiming they're going to do? Yes, they do. Will they do it? Who knows? The big difference between this is to equalize the attack, which is what they're threatening, right? Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Israel struck Iranian general in Damascus. Now, Iran is threatening to strike Israel itself. In order to do that and to be to come through on their promise, they cannot do what they always do, which is use proxy militias and Hezbollah and entities within Hamas. Because they've been doing that for years, just like they were behind, you know, October 7th. And they have attempted to slaughter innocent people continually for decades. So with this particular threat, they're basically saying, we're going to do it ourselves as a nation. Now, they most likely, at least analysts agree, will limit their attack to reduce, you know, regional escalation. But I don't think that's really going to matter, because it's not going to deter Israel from continuing to strike Iranian targets. I mean, Israel, and rightfully so, has taken the gloves off. Iran, for many, many, many years, has facilitated the murder of Westerners in general, Israel and Americans. And they do it through proxies, right? They equip Hamas, they equip terrorists, they equip Hezbollah. Even just now, as we speak, 40 to 50 rockets were launched out of Lebanon into Israel. And these aren't strikes or targeted killings. They're just lobbing them into the territory in general, right? Neighborhoods, everything. So unlike the Israelis, who strategically target bad guys, and of course there are people who get killed in those strikes, but they try as best they can to minimize those. Iran and its proxies have for many years just tried to murder Jews, period. They're just trying to murder innocent people wherever they land, right? We'll send hundreds of rockets into cities in Israel and just see who we kill. So the difference between that and what they're saying now is they're going to have to man up if they come through on this promise and try to strike Israeli government targets and use their own weaponry versus, you know, regional militias. Now, those strike ranges are based on the missiles coming from Iran itself. Of course, if you're able to move weapons closer, then your range, you know, is extended. Again, though, I don't think that the Iranian attempt to, you know, reduce regional escalation by being very strategic in their strike, I don't think that's going to matter, because Israel at this point, like America should be, is just saying, okay, let's stop pretending, right? You want the whole world to believe that because you're giving missiles to Hamas and then Hamas is murdering innocent women and children in Israel, that you're somehow innocent.
Yeah, and at like, this point, almost like your hands are clean, but they're not.
Yeah. At this point, they're like, look, if Iran is sending its generals to hang out in all of these areas surrounding Israeli cities and the country itself, like they're in Lebanon, they're in Syria, they're in, you know, Gaza amongst Hamas. Okay. So gloves are off. Now we're saying this is clearly a threat to national security. We're going after you. And that's exactly what they did. And rightfully so. Look, if Hamas was parked in Tijuana, right across the border from San Diego, and they had missiles and they had suicide bombers, and one day they launched hundreds of missiles into downtown San Diego and killed thousands of Americans and then came across the border and started raping and murdering people. Do you think for a second that we would not respond in force? Now, imagine if there was a country behind that group of terrorists like Iran or Russia or whoever, and we knew that they were there. Like, imagine we knew that an Iranian general was in Tijuana, you know, equipping cartels and terrorists to come over. And we're not too far off from this, by the way. We would be totally within our right to strike that general. And that's exactly what happened April 1st. And now the Iranians are acting like it's their, you know, we will take revenge. It's like, what are you talking about? You instigated this. There was a complete ceasefire on October 6th. You crossed over the border. You planned a massive murderous terrorist spree. And you're getting a response. So supposedly this attack is happening today or tomorrow. Who knows what they're going to do, but I do not believe it will deter Israel from continuing to strike at their enemies wherever they may be. And this is just the sad state of existing there right now. While Israel is surrounded by enemies, they're doing everything they can to keep their people alive. We'll see. You know, they've also threatened the United States for supporting Israel. I mean, they threaten people all the time. They threaten, you know, everybody's a threat.
They like to puff their chests, as most of these countries do, like North Korea, Iran, etc.
Well, and the thing is, too, unlike Iran, Israel will probably do what they say they'll do when, you know, they said in response to this, Israel has said, if you strike Israel directly, we will strike Iran directly. So not in Syria, not in Lebanon, but we're going to hit Iranian targets in Iranian cities. And I think the IRGC at this point must realize, like, oh, they mean it. And if Israel does that, they know that they'll have the support of the Americans. And if they get the support of the Americans, they'll most likely get the support of our allies in Europe, the Brits, the Germans, the French. So I don't know that Iran wants to pick this fight, you know, but they're getting called right now. You know, they've been bluffing for years. And they went too far on October 7th, and now they're getting their backsides handed to them. So I don't know where it's going to go, but I guess we'll see. So we're praying for Israel. We stand with Israel and support what they're doing. And let me just be clear: those who do not have a serious reckoning with God someday. We won't go into this in detail this episode, but the lunacy of anti-Israeli rhetoric that is sweeping through circles, conservatives and leftists alike, is absolutely demonic. It's insane. It makes no theological sense, and it makes absolutely no geopolitical sense, none whatsoever. So you have too many people that have grown followings online or in the media industry because lots of people listen to them go on rants, who are way out of their element. They have no idea what they're talking about at all. And it would do them good to be quiet for a minute and study and talk to some people that know what they're talking about. I'll leave it there. Are we going to say something else on that?
Well, I was just going to say, whether you believe the non-secular aspect of it or not, if you look at it from a secular perspective, I think a lot of these people on the conservative side are continue to buy in, and we've talked about this in the past, they continue to buy into this isolationist perspective that didn't work in World War II. It's not going to work now. Driven partly by the populist movement in the United States on the right, driven by President Trump, which is not a bad thing. I think we should take care of America first, or, you know, we should take care of America, but we can't leave our allies behind either, because eventually, like we talked about, what happens when, you know, it's easy to talk about these things that are happening in far off lands. Well, what happens when it's in Tijuana and all of a sudden there's neighborhoods in San Diego that are being pillaged and raped? Are you going to want to be an isolationist then? Because where are you going to go?
No, it's one of the most idiotic ideologies that swept through American conservatives. This idea that no money should go anywhere outside the US. That's like a 10 year old's understanding of the world. Adults understand that allies and friends matter, and that deterrence matters, and that show of force matters, and that keeping enemies at bay. I mean, 1,000 times over, I'd rather fight people overseas than here in the streets of American cities.
And that's not to say we don't have improvements that we need to make on the way that we spend money domestically, but the way that we spend money in foreign countries, it's like you're comparing apples to oranges. They want to make it the same thing, but it's not.
Well, we have some proof of that fallacy already. You know, look at the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan and how it left a void for our global opponents immediately to come in and seize assets, military equipment, intelligence, etc. And then it allowed for the immediate reconstitution of groups like ISIS, who have now successfully launched attacks in Russia. And then just this week, we saw a foiled attempt of a young man in Idaho who had sworn allegiance to ISIS. That's what happens, though. When you know, America takes a step back, it endangers the whole world. So, you know, don't be a coward. And the real question is for these people who are like, well, we should never be involved in anywhere. We shouldn't send money. It's like, okay, you can do both. You should be able to take care of your people, secure the border, take care of Americans, and also project power and help your allies. And it is possible to do both because and that's where we can hit the left for their extreme waste. There are, you know, billions of dollars of waste in this country. That's fine. We can make that argument and we would agree on that. But it's childish to think that you can hide behind your borders and never be involved in global conflicts. It's insane and it's stupid because it will lead to innocent people getting killed, which is exactly what happened in, you know, previous global conflicts. You look at World War II, right? You have guys like Neville Chamberlain over there coming back going, oh, Hitler's okay. He promised me he wouldn't do anything else, right? And millions went on to die because of the sort of ignorant isolationist perspective there. And I get it. War is horrible. And those of us who have seen it understand that more than some of these media personalities, these, you know, frat boy media personalities who have done nothing in their life. I don't need a lesson from them on how bad war is. We get it. But also there's a maturity here that understands that sometimes violence is necessary and there are just wars. And you know what? There are many variables, right? It's not so easy to break it down binary and say, well, I don't like what this guy said, so I'm not, you know, that he's wrong and this is right. It's not always like that. There's a lot of variables, and sometimes you have to navigate the variables of a situation and realize you're not going to agree with everybody on both sides all the time. It's just not going to happen. But you have to use discernment and wade through the haze of these multinational conflicts and decide what the right thing to do is. And what we know emphatically is the right thing to do is not to hide in your own country and forsake your allies and your friends. That is just idiotic. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with Iran. Anyways, let's jump over real quick to Trump's comments this week, which we do not agree with. Let's just put that out there right now. Here at Defining Truth, we are staunchly pro-life. For many reasons, not just because of our faith, but because of logic and common sense and the structure of a nation and how it affects our nation. So we don't agree with him, but Brandon, just go over just sort of cursory, nothing, you know, quoting, but like what happened? And others, by the way, we mentioned Kerry Lake as well. I have jumped on this bandwagon.
Yeah, so there's been a few prominent conservatives, Trump, Kerry Lake, a few other, who have given some weak responses on abortion. And obviously we have our position here at Defining Truth. Anybody who thinks that Trump is like a staunch, like pro-life person is, I mean, they're just wrong.
Yeah.
He never has been. He knows his base, and that's fine, right? We might love him because he's great on the economy or he's great on protecting our borders. But he's a little weak on abortion, or a lot weak. And anybody who thinks that that's like a surprise, I don't know where you've been for the last 6 years now.
Yeah. It's horrifying, right? We staunchly disagree with that nonsense, but, these are like the variables that we just mentioned, right? We're not going to agree with everyone. And primarily that's why you shouldn't pedestal someone. Like, Trump is not God. He's not a savior of humanity. he is currently the person that's the best to represent what this country needs. And you know, it's horrible that he doesn't understand the importance of fighting in the pro-life movement. But again, and we've talked about this before, this is the problem when you have the consultant class running this country. Because unfortunately, there's a lot of people that make decisions within politics based on what are the consultants telling me to say, right? They're trying to strategize. Instead of just taking a stance and doing what's right, they're waiting for someone to tell them, what should I say, based on polls, numbers, et cetera.
Well, this has always been kind of a silly thing, I thought, in the conservative movement. I don't think anybody's gained votes as a Republican by being weak on abortion.
No.
Like, the Democrats don't care. They see an R next to your name, and they're not going to vote for you.
Yes.
So to compromise on something as important to your base, abortion, taxes, guns, to compromise on those three things to maybe get 10% more from the middle that you're not going to get anyways, why compromise? Because now you just lost 10% from your base because they're like, well, you know what? I'm a Republican because I'm a pro-lifer. And I don't care, right? Yeah. I'm a one-issue voter. I don't care about anything else.
It's the dumbest thing that they do.
And now I'm going to go vote for RFK because he is pro-life, which, I, by the way, I don't know if he is or not. I'm just using that as an
example. No, he's not.
Yeah, but I'm just using that as an example. I'm going to go vote for
another
option
person.
C.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before. There is zero data, zero, to back the common consultant class recommendation that you apologize constantly to the left about our issues. It's insane. It's like, and we see that in California quite a bit, and there's no reason for that whatsoever. There's no supporting evidence. And just to be clear, what are we talking about? We're saying that no matter what Trump says about abortion, not a single crazy leftist is going to all of a sudden be like, well, I guess I'm going to vote for Trump because he says that, you know, we should be more pro-abortion. It's like, are you out of your mind? Like, you're not turning any votes anywhere. You're not reaching anyone new. In fact, quite the opposite, I would say. You're isolating your own base at the expense of appeasing your enemies. This is what we saw, right? Roe v. Wade, for example. We get this great victory, and immediately we turn around and start apologizing for it. It's like, no, how about we press harder? Don't apologize. Go for more. That weakness is really evidence of the lack of moral fortitude within the political class. And this is what, you know, we're all about at Defining Truth. We have a bunch of politicians that call themselves conservative, but many of them don't know why. And when they're pressed to give a defense for what they believe, they don't know how to say it. So they turn to the consultants, you know, who are making a bunch of money, and they're like, well, you know, you got to get these voters that, and I'm convinced this middle class of undecided people don't exist. There are people right now in this country that are either voting Republican or they're voting Democrat, one of the two. The Democrats have been very clear about their stance, and they're very loud about it. They are progressive Marxist. They hate America. They're racist. They want to destroy any influence, biblical influence in this country, and they're very open about it. They talk about it constantly, right? Out loud, in front of everyone to see. And then you have conservatives who are constantly trying to apologize for who they are. Well, you know, we don't want them to call us names and, you know, let's not talk about abortion. It's like, why? What are you afraid of? Are you just a coward? Or maybe you just that you don't believe in anything in the first place. Nothing good will come from compromise. You give the devil an inch and he'll take a mile. And that is what America has suffered from. And of course, this is why we constantly bring it back to the church, because we're like, the church, the light in the dark, you're supposed to be equipping people with the knowledge and the moral understanding and the fortitude to stand up for what's right. But when the church is silent, the world stumbles around in the dark, and they'll seek other sources of wisdom and discernment, like consultants and philosophies and a bunch of nonsense and waste of time. So, yeah, I mean, I would just say overall, right, like this, it shouldn't shock anybody that politicians, like, do things that are stupid or, you know, that you disagree with them. This is not going to shift the dynamic here. We're not going to say, oh, well, I guess I can't vote for Trump now because, you know, he doesn't agree with us on abortion. Well, it's like anybody who's followed politics knows that we don't agree with him on a lot of things. He's still the best guy for the job.
We kind of already knew where he stood on it. He just said the quiet part out loud.
Yeah, because some consultants are telling him, like, you got to say this, you'll win some people over, which they're liars, which is ridiculous. But as we've discussed previously, the consultant class on the Republican side makes all their money by losing. And that's well documented, right? The more they're, what do we determine, right? Their best case scenario is to lose by one vote, right? Because then they keep the House list and they get to run a candidate the next year. So it's like you can make millions of dollars over a 15-year period, or your guy wins and you're sort of done for the foreseeable future, right? So that's something that really needs to be addressed, because it's destroying us and it's infected these people's minds to take stances on issues, and they're just totally lost, you know? Man, we just need some people with internal fortitude and character, you know, to stand up and say, look, I believe this is wrong and this is what I'm saying, and stick with it. So that aside, I would say this is no reason to not, you know, make sure that you vote conservative.
Well, the left is just
coming elections,
because just as much out of touch on the other side. I saw a video in a reporter went into a black community where there's these new electric chargers for electric vehicles, and they're interviewing this woman, and she's like, this is the most idiotic thing that I've seen from the Biden administration. We don't need electric chargers. We can't even afford electric vehicles. We need our schools to be better and our streets to be paved and things like that.
So yeah, we need fathers to stay home and raise their kids and, yeah, you know, people to go to work and education. And yeah, they're just, but like we talked about last episode, right? They're cloud pivoting America. They're purposefully overloading and breaking down the system so that people are more dependent on the government. The Democrats have made that abundantly clear. Yeah. Seek and you shall find. I would say the truth is out there. It's not that hard to find information and discover the reality of a situation. As much as the left wants people to abandon critical thinking and logic because they say you're racist if you do, I would encourage you, seek truth. Find out the reality of a situation, make informed decisions, and hey, check out definingtruth.org, and you can pick up a book, which we have right here, titled Self, Defining Truth. And we go through a bunch of these topics and we break it down on why we believe what we believe as conservatives, both from a faith perspective and from a common sense, logical perspective that has supported Western civilization for many years. So until next time, stay real.